Hi, I'm Steph.
And I'm Jules.
And welcome to The Babesmen.
Steph is a body positive photographer.
And Jules is an intuitive eating and body image coach.
And we're passionate about empowering people to own their bodies and themselves so that they can live their biggest, boldest lives.
So join us as we celebrate the stories of incredible humans and the bodies they've lived them in. Mabel, why are you looking at me like that?
Intro.
It's the Babesmen. Welcome.
It's the Babesmen.
I'm Steph. That's Jules.
I'm Jules, even though I sound funky. I'll explain.
That's her.
I'll explain why I sound funky in the episode. I won't do it
You'll
twice.
You'll get it.
You'll get it.
Don't worry. You're going to get it.
Don't worry.
Who do we have with us today?
We have Katie Fijanowski, who is an anti-diet and body image coach. Love Katie. I had the privilege of getting to spend 6 intimate months with her inside the anti-diet health coach camp. And she's just a gem. And not only is she, you know, an intuitive eating and body image coach, but she also works at a big like franchise gym, which we get into at the end of the episode, really talking about how she's able to kind of disrupt this fitness culture that is very diet culture-y. And just very beautifully kind of, what's the word I want to use? She is just,
I know the word you're thinking, but I can't.
Mabel is giving us the funniest.
She knows the word and she can't say it either because she didn't speak English.
She is like,
she's infiltrating.
Like, yes. Yes. Yeah. And there's a different word other than that, but that works.
You're doing a more gentle hand motion.
It's like this, like, I don't know. She's very
blending right in.
It's really amazing. I love to see anti-diet people infiltrate and disrupt the fitness world from a really beautiful way because fitness rocks. And I hate that diet culture has fucked it up so royally.
For sure. Our conversation with Katie is fantastic. You're obviously here because you're going to listen to it.
So we're just going to...
So why don't we let you?
Let you get right in.
Here's Katie.
And it's Pijanowski, right?
Yeah. We don't need another like on my episode where I'm like, how do you say it?
I mean...
I like needed to like see
it.
I was like, it's Pijanowski. I mean, Polish girl sees Polish girl.
Hey, game recognized game.
I was like, I can pronounce Pijanowski because Wino was my maiden name.
Yeah, I've got that sweet, short German last name. Streb.
Now I have a German last name. People always like ask, they're like, someone this weekend was like, do you like your like new last name? And I'm like, I actually love that like it's way easier to pronounce. Like, and which you wouldn't think because Olemacher is not like... Streb or Smith or Jones. Like,
yeah, but it makes more sense than Wino.
Yes.
It was spelled Wojno.
Right. It was spelled Wojno.
Yeah. So like, see, I would never have pronounced it like that.
Never. And like this weekend, I was at a bachelorette party. Hi, Kath. She listens to the podcast. What's up? Well, she's on the podcast, actually. Y'all heard her.
She's been on the podcast.
I was at Catherine's bachelorette party in Charleston. And when I put my order in for some beers at a brewery, they like called your name. And she correctly said Olemacher. And I was like, There you go.
You're like, oh, hey.
Yeah. And I can like go to a bar and they're like, hey, like, what's your tab? And I can say Olemacher. Mm-hmm. And they have no problems. But with Wino, I'd be like, it's Wino, Wojno. And they'd be like, what? Also,
I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, listeners, for my scratchy voice.
That's also because Julia was at a bachelorette party.
I was at a bachelorette party. And it really happened because of 2 instances that I will share with you all. Number one, this group of friends, we love the song Mr. Brightside. And on Friday night, it came on in a bar. And we no one else fucking cared. And we just went ham. And then on Saturday, we walk into our first bar and they had live music. And All Too Well by Taylor Swift was what the band was playing.
A dream.
I have a really hilarious video
just
of me singing totally off key. And it's screaming.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's worth it for worth it losing my breath to All Too Well. Voice to All Too Well and to Mr. Brightside. But that's my disclosure before the podcast when you're all like, what the
you're
fuck
like,
is
why
wrong
does
with Julie?
Julie sound like this?
I'm like Phoebe from Friends right now with like sexy voice.
Julie's had a long weekend.
I brought
her a Starbucks.
You
She's
did.
Doing okay.
I had pho for lunch and I got extra broth. just to like really juice me up with all the liquids. Anyway. hi, Katie. Hi, Katie. It's so good to have you.
I am so glad to be here. I feel like I'm already part of the conversation because I listen to The Babesmen every week.
Do you really? Yes, I do.
Feel like I'm just a part of the conversation already. So it's just like so natural.
Oh my God. Well, welcome.
Welcome to The Babesmen. We're so excited to have you with us.
Thank you.
Tell our listeners where you're from and what you do.
What's up, listeners? My name is Katie Pijanowski, and I'm in Dallas, Texas, but originally from Chicago, Illinois, the suburbs. So I am an anti-diet body image coach, and I'm also a personal trainer. So I've actually been doing that for 4 years in many different forms. But I think that what I'll kind of share throughout this episode today is kind of how I've taken that switch, especially from that personal training perspective of starting into it from this very like traditional health mindset of lose weight, change your body, follow strict meal plans, all the way to the other side to now where I'm very, you know, anti-diet focused. And I bring that into the training that I do now. And it's very fun to be able to kind of interrupt those conversations that are happening in the fitness studio. Mm. They happen all the time in all so many different ways. And I'm just like, let's talk about this.
Let's unpack this
about
a little
me.
Bit.
What else about me? I love being outside. I love naps. Traveling. Yes. I just got back from Nashville at like 2 a.m. So.
Oh my God. So we're kind of on the same page.
We're on the same level today then.
Only your voice sounds much better than mine.
Listen, I'm like ready. I don't know what it is. I just am amped up and ready to go.
I mean, are you feeling her energy?
I feel it. I feel the
your
energy.
Your energy is life-giving.
You said a phrase that I had never heard before. I'm coming in on two wheels.
And I was like, what the fuck? I love
which
this.
Which is like coming in hot, which is everybody knows is one of my favorite phrases.
We're coming in hot.
We're coming in on two wheels.
Now you have a new way to say it.
Yes. I didn't know that you were originally from Chicago.
Yeah. So I've actually lived in a couple of places. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, about an hour south of the city. Frankfort, Illinois, which is kind of small. But if you knew where like Orland Park is, it's just south of that.
Awesome.
Joliet is another thing I usually mention. Uh-huh. Okay. So people usually know where that's at.
Yeah.
I'm about 20 Love minutes Chicago. From there. My mom and my brother still live there, but I went to school at Ball State in Indiana.
Yeah.
So spent some time there. And then I went to Colorado for a year, and Dallas is now my home and I love it. And I think I'll stay here.
Well, damn. Nice. Love it.
And all over. Crazy,
love it.
But here
love
we are.
Love it. Oh my gosh. Well, let's get right to it because we got some good, juicy stuff to dive into today. So Steph, do you want to kick us off with our first question?
I would love to. So Katie, since you're a listener of The Basement, you know that we always like to start with the first question for everybody, which is, can you tell us a bit about what your relationship with your body was like when you were young?
Absolutely. So I was really thinking about this today as I was kind of preparing for this conversation. And I think up until the age of about 4, I was very in my body, having fun, you know, going outside, being a kid. And I think where the shift happened was entering into school, where you're around peers and you're around, you know, other people who are now basically projecting their ideas of what bodies look like, about how to act in the world. And I think up until that point, I thought I was the coolest kid ever. I was like, I'm super cute. Everyone loves me. And I really believed that until about, you know, when I'm 5 and I'm in kindergarten and, you know, kids are mean. And I remember specifically like a little boy just calling me like ugly or fat or something. And I just immediately knew that that was supposed to make me feel shame. Mm-hmm. And I immediately felt small and started to kind of shrink away and disconnect. And what you guys talk about a lot is that self-objectification. And that's really where that started, was really starting to separate myself and start to see how other people viewed bodies. And I knew even at that young age that being in a bigger body was supposed to make me feel shame. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to keep me back from having what I wanted. And I actually had grown up with my mom was a part of like, I would be going to these like weight meetings, right? So I was around that stuff from a young age because she worked them and she checked people in and I watched people get on the scales like all the time. And I remember kind of thinking that it was odd because I admired a lot of the people around me. I thought they were great. And, you know, that environment brings this very negative frame of mind. And even at, you know, a young age, I knew like I had this like kind of, I didn't feel like my body was enough mm-hmm. kind of, but I never really did anything about it. Mm-hmm. Like I just had this general sense of body dissatisfaction and just kind of felt like I don't look like the other girls. I'm bigger than the other girls. Boys don't like me as much because of this. And that's just how it is. And I kind of just like accepted that as my reality for a really long time. And a lot of my friends were smaller than me. So that was, you know, reinforced by not being able to share clothes with them when you're playing dress up and just doing all those types of things. And I'm very lucky to not have had many experiences where people were very unkind to me, like directly. Most of my friends are very supportive. They loved me for who I was as a person, but you know, those little things just kind of really sink in. And I think I internalized most of it for a really long time. And I think it was about 10 or 11 when I heard my neighbors who were my best friends growing up, one of their older sisters who kind of intimidated me because I thought, you know, they're older, they're cool, and they're respected. And I recall kind of overhearing one of them say like, Katie's super great, but if only she could lose like 10 or 15 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I remember like going out to they had a trampoline at the time. So I'm like laying on this trampoline, looking at the sky and thinking, like, I kind of have this intuitive sense, even at that age, that that wasn't right. And I was like, I don't really think that's the case. Like, I just kind of knew it wasn't right. And so again, I never really did anything about it. Like, I'd always had that, oh, it's summertime in between school. I'm going to work out and follow the plans and come back a new person. That was always my goal, but I never really did anything about it. I think I was pretty good about living in my body and being outside and playing, but there was always that general dissatisfaction. The changes didn't really come until after college, where the narrative was, well, I don't have any excuses anymore at school. I better like get healthy, quote unquote, and follow all these things. So I did what most people do January 1 and joined a gym. I got coaxed into the personal training thing where mm-hmm. I was paying as a new college grad, like $230 a month to see a trainer 30 minutes a week.
Wow.
Okay. So I was a waitress at the time. So to put that in perspective as well, but I thought that that's what people do when they're trying to get healthy. So I did that and was trying to also figure out at the same time what I wanted to do. I graduated with a psychology undergrad, knew I wanted to help people. And wasn't really sure how I was going to do that, but didn't really feel like I wanted to go back to grad school. It didn't feel like the right route. So I actually had come upon in 2016, I think it was like May, health coaching through an MLM company. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. My friend does it. She goes all these cool places. She's traveling. She's making money, helping people. And she's like, you know, getting fit. Awesome. I can help other people and help myself too. So that is kind of the pull that put me into all of the, you know, superfood shakes and following the meal plans. But I never really strictly followed the meal plans until about 2018. So I was already a personal trainer at this time. So I was working out, doing outdoor boot camps here in Texas. And so I was doing that, also doing online boot camps, selling these, you know, weight loss products essentially. And I decided on 2018 to do an 80-day program where every single meal is planned out. You can only have specific foods at specific times, every other couple of hours, and it was for 80 days. So I remember every single Sunday, I would be going to the grocery store, planning all my meals, and that was what I would eat for the week. And about month two, I remember having a meltdown because all I wanted was chocolate. And the only thing that was approved to eat was these homemade, you know, no bake chocolate oatmeal cookies. And you can only eat them every other Thursday or something like that.
Oh my God.
I ate that day. And I remember feeling so awful. And keep in mind too, like this particular diet that I was on, I was eating a lot of food. Okay. So I was eating a lot, but the piece that was missing and what I know now from my perspective with intuitive eating was the satisfaction because I was never satisfied with what I was eating. Yeah. So I was eating so much, but I was also working out so much. So on top of the workout plan, I was also doing boot camps. I was also training for a half marathon. And so after that 80 days, I remember being in Cancun for a trip that I earned. And all I thought about the entire trip, like these are the only memories I have of that trip that was supposed to be a fun, joyful. My boyfriend at the time was there. My friends were there. And I remember how I was feeling going past like the cupcake, like container and being like, oh my God. And then I'd eat one and then I'd eat more and then I'd eat. And I'm like, oh my God, my body's changing. Holy shit. I'm losing my results. oh my God, I'm a, you know, imposter because I'm selling this stuff and I'm supposed to quote unquote look this way because I'm a trainer and a health coach. And immediately, you know, that fear and then anxiety starts sinking in because I'm being rewarded and like complimented and praised for having six pack abs and like, you're so fit and blah, blah, blah. But I was struggling.
Yeah.
And like, that's what kind of like really, really set it off for me. Cause I came back after that trip and I remember thinking specifically, I don't trust myself to know what to eat it without this plan.
Yeah.
So again, began the really extreme diet and binge. And until it was just straight binge eating for about 9 months. Mm. And I was going through a lot of personal stuff at that time as well. Food was the only thing that I had. I remember teaching a boot camp at 5:15 a.m. I could put on a face, do the workout, and then everyone would leave. And like, it would just, everything was just like pressing down on my chest.
Yeah.
I would go to the nearest gas station, get all the snacks, all the different things, and just binge in my car. And the journal entries that I was doing that during that time were very, very dark, very like depressed, very like, didn't know what to do. And all these programs that I'm selling, I'm basically living on this paradigm, right? So I am making my money based on all these things that are essentially like hurting me. Mm-hmm. So I'm binge eating, I'm feeling awful, but then I'm exercising way more on top of it because I'm trying to keep up with everything, which produced injuries that I still deal with today. That was 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
So it started this like huge, just like crazy down spiral until about 2019, early 2019. I was like, this doesn't have to be the way it is. Mm. I cannot do this any longer. And it was really a close friend of mine who kind of pointed out that it wasn't working for her either, that really had me take a hard look at what I was doing and realize it was hurting me too.
Yeah.
And I couldn't with integrity continue to lead people into programs and systems that were also hurting me and that were not helping them. I just knew there had to be another way and I needed to heal first. Mm. So it was a really, really tough moment because I felt like an imposter. I felt like I had led so many people astray. And I felt responsible for that. And that was my income at the time. So, I mean, just imagine, like, it was terrifying and it was completely hard to be able to look at that. So I actually quit both of those businesses and got a corporate job so that I could stabilize myself and heal. I hired coaches, I hired mentors, and I healed myself through intuitive eating and through working with Holly and Body Image. And I worked with you and Holly in your anti-diet health coach camp, which
yes.
was a huge help,
yeah.
huge, huge help. And like, it blows my mind looking back because I remember when I first learned about intuitive eating, I was like, this is impossible. Like, there's no way I'm going to like never think about food because it just felt like my every thought was going towards that. Mm-hmm. What am I eating? When am I eating? Is there approved foods going to be available? I already ate that today. Can I eat that again? There was so much self-doubt.
Yeah.
And today I can just like confidently like say that I do not really think about food unless I'm hungry. Like there is no stress. Yeah. I just got back from Nashville from a bachelorette party for one of my closest friends from college. And I felt so embodied the entire experience. I didn't work out. We like enjoyed paddleboarding and home cooked meals. And I was there. Like I remember our conversations. I remember, you know, being with people. And that's not something I could say for those 3 years. I was very engulfed in diet culture and trying to uphold the standard of what a personal trainer looks like or what a health mm-hmm. coach looks like. And I'm just so thankful for that because it's cleared the way for me to be able to do a lot deeper healing for myself and a lot deeper healing for my clients. Mm. So huge, long story, but that's basically me.
I could just feel, and I'm wondering, Seth, if you felt the same thing, like listening to your story, just like I could feel the spiral. I was like, mm-hmm. I was in it with you. I was in the spiral and in like the chaos and in like the up and down. And it started like, if you're to actually picture like a literal spiral where it, you know, starts like a wide, you know, circle and then narrow, 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 that was like the image in my head because it's like at first it was just these little things, these little comments. And I love that you said, you know, people would use the word fat and I knew that that was supposed to make me feel shame, right? And I love that differentiation there, like that culture said I should feel ashamed. Not that like it is a bad thing, you know, but culture says it should be a bad thing. But then over time, right, it's like all these little things kind of compound. And then I know how easy it is to get swept up in the fitness world and wellness culture and that real big pressure to be like, I have to look the part. Like if I am this instructor, I have to look the part. I have to have this certain body, all of it. And 80 days, I mean, most like diet things are like 25 days or 28 days or 30 days or whatever, like 80 days.
When
I was like, damn.
You were describing that, I was just like, oh
my God.
Like I was just like shriveling up thinking about 80 days of like meal plan and being so hyper focused on everything that you're eating and everything that you're doing. Like I remember that life so well.
Yeah. And you're so
hyper focused. Like crazy.
Right. And you're so spot on in terms of when we're in that space of like being on those extreme diets and being so regimented, you know, you really do just give so much of your brain space and energy, to all the food and the exercise and the control that it really does rob you from your life, from these moments, you know, and travel. I recently posted on Instagram a similar thing. Like I have traveled a lot this summer. Clearly it's catching up to me. And
somebody needs some rest.
Clearly I need some rest. and how in the past, like that wouldn't have been possible because of my stress and quote control around food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this paradox of like, I felt like I was in control, but really it was the food and exercise that were totally controlling me, you know? And like
100%.
What a big difference when you think about like at that point, my quote unquote health routine was taking away from my life.
Yeah.
When what a health routine is supposed to do is give to your life, right? Like we care about our health so that we can show up fully for friends, family, ourselves, just our life in general, right? But then what ends up happening oftentimes is, yeah, that line gets crossed and our health routine suddenly starts to take away from our life and it keeps us from being present and it keeps us stressed and it keeps us, I mean, as you said, like totally just reducing ourselves to objects, you know, not living as actual human beings. And oh my God, it is all consuming.
Yeah, it is all consuming. And it was very distracting to the actual things that I was having problems with, right? And I think that's where we get latched on to dieting. Because when I look back at that time of my life, that moment of hyper-focus with the 80-day program was distracting me from the fact that a long-term relationship was coming to an end and I didn't want to deal with the identity crisis I was going to experience from being single.
Yeah.
And that was very challenging to look at. But when I was in my own spiral, you know, and realizing I truly just didn't have control, I don't know, it felt really scary. And I totally get that, right? Like that's, I think where a lot of we have to do in this work is kind of grieve the loss of that perceived control when really at least for me, it was a distraction. And as it comes to travel, like you were speaking about, I was thinking about this morning in the shower. For me, it was almost when I was in those dieting phases, it was almost like while I was on the diet, I was holding my breath. And then I would go on the vacation and I would finally breathe and I'd just take this huge, like, and I just eat everything. And like, then I felt awful because I'm not actually listening to my body. I felt so restricted for so long that I'm just, you know, like anyone would do if you were holding your breath for a really long time, you have to take in a lot of air, right? Yes. Same thing if you're restricting food, you have to take in a lot of food to get back to this place of neutral. And when I have always really traveled a lot since I've graduated from college. And so when I was in that dieting phase, it was like, hold your breath, big gas, hold your breath, big gasp. And so like when you'd come back from vacations, it was like, okay, now I got to, you know, get the meal plan done and do this. And it was like, just very restrictive and just felt very like, I felt very anxious during the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
And like yesterday, I had just a heck of a time getting back to Dallas because there were storms in Nashville. And I didn't freak out about it because I was like, okay, there's plenty of food here in the airport. I ended up getting M&Ms and Chex Mix because that's what I wanted. And I ate that and it was great. And then I got back here to Dallas and like, I just have had like the best morning. Like, I don't know. I just started cleaning and got laundry done. Like that's the kind of person I am. When I come back from travel, I immediately wash everything and do all the things. And
yes.
I just kept thinking like, wow, this is so amazing. Like, I don't have to stress about needing to control my body after this time of relaxation. I just get to be and just continue to be for the rest of my life. And how cool.
Yeah. I think it's something that you said was really interesting to me talking about, you know, like wanting that sense of control when we get into these hyper-focused states. Like I know for me, I mean, I consider myself a recovering control addict. Like, you know, working on it. But,
but we all are.
I mean, aren't we all? Mm-hmm. It's, you know. Anyway, but I think that something that a lot of us don't always like attribute to our disordered eating or orthorexia or like things like this is that we're seeking that sense of control. And it's something that we fall back into, especially when things in our life can be very chaotic. Like, it's very natural for to want to seek that kind of control and that kind of distraction when something big is shifting in your life. And I think, you know, it's something that we've talked about on the podcast before, but like acknowledging that a lot of times our issues with our body is a symptom of something else going on in our life. It's not actually the thing that's wrong with us. Like our body is really not ever the problem. It's
yes.
that things are out of our control. And that is really, really hard as a human who, especially as women, who we have been taught that we are supposed to be fixers and we are supposed to make things better and we're supposed to be able to handle everything. And so the brunt of all of that really gets taken out on our bodies. And it's used as such a distraction technique from everything else that's going on, as if we make our body smaller, all of the other problems will just go away.
Yeah.
That's definitely what I thought when I was in that, you know, like if all my problems would just go away, it was like this little island, like if I could just get here to this weight where I like suddenly have no problems in my life ever again. Like that's kind of how it felt.
Yeah.
And it's so much more freeing now to just be able to live in the good moments and the bad moments and know that like, I'm okay. Like, and yeah. when it comes to like those body things too, like I had a moment maybe a month ago where I was experiencing my thoughts usually go to criticizing like my belly region. And I think a lot mm-hmm. of women can relate to that. That's something that I had to work really hard on for a long time. And every once in a while, it'll still come up after a couple years of doing this work. But the difference now is instead of taking it out of my body, I'm like, okay, like I'm having these thoughts about how my stomach is feeling and, you know, all these typical narratives that we have, like I'm bloated and like my pants aren't fitting, like something must be wrong. It must be what I'm eating. It must be how I'm exercising. And I was like, okay, wait, what's really going on? And I placed a hand on my stomach. I was driving home actually. And I was like, what's really going on? What am I feeling? I'm feeling insecure. How do I know? I'm feeling it in my stomach. It's feeling, you know, like this kind of, I don't know, just like this pit in my stomach. Why am I feeling insecure? Well, I had been, rejected by someone I was dating for a little while. And I was like, yeah, it feels really awful to feel rejected and ghosted and to not know what's going on and to feel like it's my fault and something I would have done. Yeah. I'm feeling insecure and it's not actually my body's fault. And I was able to take that and like thank my body for telling me how I was feeling and be able to work through that emotion instead of like taking it out on like beating myself up at the gym, which is what I probably would have done before.
That is such a beautiful point. I'm so happy. Thank you for sharing that story because it really gets to the bottom of so much, right? Like, let's be real. It is way easier to just blame our bodies and turn to, you know, diet and exercise than it is to like confront, you know, life's harder problems. It, like, mm-hmm. you know, okay, can I confront Maple's being so fucking cute right now? Like, it hurts.
Like, she's so cute.
She's being so
cute. She just snuggled
cute.
Her little snout onto my
leg. Yeah,
oh my God, she's so cute. But like, seriously.
I'm having a moment.
Oh my, you're just basking.
I'll just
she's
be over here.
Freaking best. Like, it'd be way easier if the problem was just like, oh, I just need to like, you know, control my body, exercise more. then actually being like, oh, wait a minute, I'm feeling these deeper things right now because of these insecurities. I'm feeling, you know, rejected, like actually confront the emotions and the experience of what's actually happening. Like those problems are harder to solve, right? Than mm-hmm. like we think going to the gym and controlling food. It really is this distraction. I had a client once be like, you know, I realized that, she realized what a massive distraction dieting was for her. And for her, it was this like coping mechanism to help her numb out when like life felt hard. It was like, okay, let's just not think about life. Let's just get lost in counting calories and counting points and exercise, you know. And she had said like how she was like proud of herself for going on this like intuitive eating and body image journey because she had embarked upon that in 2020 when like everything was so hard, right?
Yeah.
And instead of trying to run away from it all, you know, she did the hard thing of saying, actually, I'm going to give up this major sense of control with dieting, and I'm going to turn to intuitive eating, and I'm going to actually do this deeper work. And that's not an easy choice because, you know, it's what's numbing out is easy, right? Like,
yeah,
it's easier just to numb out and to focus on these, you know, surface level things like how we look instead of life's actual problems.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we've all done it. And I still, you know, there's moments where I find myself doing that. And like part of intuitive eating, one of the principles is permission to eat. But I think it's permission is my word for the year. And, you know, it's just permission to feel, permission to not fix this right now, because I was very like, fix it, you know, like I need to fix this right now. Right. Yeah. Whenever I was feeling a negative emotion. And I think permission for me is kind of also just, you know, being able to feel those hard things and know that like, I don't have to do anything about it right now. I don't know. There's permission has been like a big, big thing for me, which kind of leads into this more like self-trust, which I think is at the foundation of what gets to happen when you step into intuitive eating and body image work. It's like when you trust yourself, like to go out and do new things, to meet new people, to do things that are scary, and you have your own back and you don't judge yourself so harshly, like a lot gets to open up for you, and a lot has opened up for me in the last couple of years that I've been able to do that. And it's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you are so spot on. And I think what makes everything like compounded too, in this sense of, you know, dieting being this like big numbing experience, right? Especially when life gets hard, is what you said earlier too, with like, not only does it distract us for sure, but we've also been sold this idea since we were little girls that there is this island, right?
Yeah.
Of, oh, but if I just fix my body to look this certain way, well, then all my problems will go away.
Right.
You know? And so there's this added element that like we have been told our whole lives that all of our problems will magically go away if we just look a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, wouldn't that be something?
I mean,
wouldn't that? Yeah.
Damn. I mean, yeah, it would be great if, you know, if the diet actually worked and you actually got into the skinny body, and then it's like you woke up one day and it's like, oh, you've achieved it. Like you check the box and then everything else goes away. Everything else just sort of floats away and you're like, what? And they're, you know, they open up the big pearly gate to Skinnyville and they're like, welcome aboard.
Now you're happy and now you're falling in love and now like, you'll have all the wonderful, you know, things.
And like everybody gets a bajillion dollars upon entering and like there's no health issues and you know, you just get everything you want. It like comes along with that like size zero gene that you get. But like that's not fucking real. And it can be really hard to like accept that that's not true, because it's like we were saying earlier, like it's easy to numb yourself out. It's easy to want to put your brain on a shelf and just like focus on your body and like separate yourself from yourself.
Yeah.
It's also easy to go along with what everybody else believes is true, which is that skinny will get you that like golden ticket, right? Like that's the main belief system. And so to choose a not very popular belief system, which is that we're actually meant to all come in different shapes and sizes and our bodies are not things to be controlled, is really hard. And it takes a lot of trust in yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a body image trigger recently where I noticed that I was like the biggest girl with this group. And it was very subconscious that I noticed myself being like, oh my gosh, like having these like negative body thoughts. And then I took a beat, kind of like you were saying, right? And it's like, wait, why is this coming up? And it's like, oh, I just want to belong.
Yeah.
You know? And so it like, okay, I'm wanting belonging. And my old diet brain and my old, you know, dysmorphic eating disorder brain is like, well, to belong, you have to look like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, right, it's like, okay, I'm actually getting to like the core of what's happening, right? It's actually not about my body. It's this desire for belonging. And my diet brain is tricking me to say, oh, like it's your body's fault. Mm-hmm. And then I can say, okay, wait a minute. No, that's actually not true. I actually already belong just as I am. And then it's also this moment of like looking around and being like, it's like, how I look, period, just my appearance, period, isn't changing the human experience I'm having in this moment. Like, if I was to look very different than I do, in whatever way, like, in that moment, I was like, it wouldn't change my experience. Like, I'm still a human being in this moment, you know, doing this activity. Like, that wouldn't change because I was still showing up fully, right? Like, sure, right. I had this, like, little voice in the back of my head, but I was like, I was still showing up fully because of the work I've done, right? So it didn't make me like hide or do whatever. And so I was like, wait a minute, that's so silly that I would, that voice in my brain would tell me, oh, if you just look different, then like things would be better. I'm like, I'm having a great time right now. Like, like if I was to be smaller than I am, I'd be having the exact same time. Like, because I am a human, I'm not an object, right? Like I am more than a body. I'm more than my appearance. Like I'm a human. And so it's also just this interesting thing. And that's where I really, you know, and again, we always say this, and I think it's always important to bring back up, like, it's so normal to have body image triggers. Like, even when you're years and years and years into this work, it is the most normal thing in the world because we're human beings living in diet culture, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like generations of this belief that like we should all be skinny and whatnot. And so I love this piece of this conversation that, you know, to really like look at, okay, wait a minute, what's happening? What am I actually like desiring right now? Or what am I actually feeling insecure about that's bringing out the body image problem? Because that is such a key thing, because you're right, Katie. Like it's, if we're having a body image like hard day or moment, it's likely about something much deeper that we're just so trained to blame on our bodies and shift the focus to our bodies instead. And so what a great practice when we're in that space of having a triggering day or week to really just give ourselves that time to be like, okay, what else might be happening that's making me feel this way about my body? Mm-hmm. And then we can actually get to the core of it and move on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's everything. Like to be able to like, okay, that's what's happening here. And that's why this is happening. All right. Nope. My body is good. I don't have to worry. Okay. Carry on.
Well, and I think for me, a big factor of doing this work was being able to get to that place of acknowledging how I felt. Because I mean, I know that my body dysmorphia and my disassociation from myself living in my body was so strong for so many years that like, the idea of taking a pause and being like, how do I actually feel underneath blaming my belly right now would have been so far outside of my reach. I would not have known how to access those feelings and being like, where is this feeling living in my body right now? What does this actually feel like? Does this actually feel like me thinking I have a fat stomach? Or does this feel like me feeling insecure and scared? Like, and those are tools that I was only able to access because I started learning that actually not everything was my body's fault. I mean, it's like you were saying, Katie, like I just had this morning, like my body has obviously changed significantly during quarantine and the last year and depression and all the things that I've been through. And I, you know, I caught myself in the mirror naked this morning, as I so often do. And I saw my belly and I was like, oh, she's there, she is. Like, and I had that like instant pang of like, oh, my belly is probably bigger. And then I just was like, no, and I put my hands on my stomach, just like you said. And I put my hands on my stomach and I was like, we're good. You're good. I'm good. And like, yeah. That's all. That's all I had to do. And then I knew that like that feeling wasn't because the way that my belly looks changed. It's because I've been going through it. Like, you know, and I was allowed to take that moment and know that that feeling didn't belong to my belly.
Yes.
And that's such a fucking huge deal.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I think we like discount those things because I feel like looking back, those are some of my biggest wins. And I really relate to what you just said, Steph, because I also really was disassociated with how I was actually feeling.
Yeah.
It would just come out as dissatisfaction with my life or my body. And like, that's just how it was. And Holly used to always say to me, like, you're trying to logic your way through this. Let's actually like close your eyes and step into your body. Let's see what she's saying. And that was such a foreign concept to me. If I were to go back a year from now, when I was just starting to do more of that more embodiment practice, I thought, you know, I think my dieting fitness brain was like, oh, this is a waste of time. You know, like whenever I did yoga or things that was slowing down, it felt like a waste of time that I'd have to do more because it was coming from that place of like needing to strive and do more to succeed, which I don't believe is the truth anymore. I believe things get to be easy and fun and I just get to do and, you know, receive whatever I desire. That's my new belief. But it used to be a super foreign concept to sit down and see how I'm feeling. And I had no idea what I was feeling. I mean, my feelings were about, you know, happy, sad, angry, like what a 3-year-old could probably express. But now I can tell the difference between like sad and insecure and rejected and okay, like now actually diving in deeper, right? Like just like you did and you're, like thanking your body for that and acknowledgement, like, oh, okay, thank you for giving me this sign that I have to work through this thing or process this thing. And I feel like it's such a gift now. Those little triggers that pop up, it's almost like a call to do some little healing. And so I thank those triggers for being there because it offers more room to go deeper and heal.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm curious, Katie, to talk about your experience, like doing this work, and because it's a big switch from where you were to where you are now. In a way, that's so similar to what I've been through too. Curious what that was like for you doing this work of making this massive switch from like uber diet culture to intuitive eating and body image healing while you are still in the fitness space actively as you're doing this work yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know how triggering the fitness space can be. Yeah. And it's one thing to have triggers when you have done this work and you can so like, like triggers truly do become like not a big deal, right? Like it's cool when like you've gotten so far in this work that like, for instance, the trigger I mentioned, it was no big deal. It was a thought in my mind that I easily was able to be like, old diet culture brain, nope, I'm good, push it away, right? And just say like, all right, you're good, bye, right? I could easily dismiss it. And it did not impact my mood, my feelings, my day, my experience, nothing, right? It was just a little voice that wanted to come back and I heard it and I worked through it very quickly, mind you. And then, boop, okay, I'm cool, right? That's what it's like now. But triggers at the beginning are hard.
Super hard.
Especially when you are flipping from dieting into the intuitive eating paradigm, which is a complete 180. And when you've been so entrenched in the fitness world, which I get because I was there too, it's like everything you thought you knew about health and wellness and fitness is being turned on its head.
But,
and you're like, fuck, like, oh my God. Like, And that itself is can be hard to fully grasp and takes time to grasp. So all that to say, what was your experience like doing your own healing to come out of diet culture while in a way kind of being actively entrenched in diet culture?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a lot of, in the beginning, self-doubt. I was doing a lot of it on my own at first. I think where I was able to do a lot more healing and work through that self-doubt is when I started working with coaches to help me navigate that. And I knew that I needed to do that because I had a client who I had signed for my program and we were going through, and there was a lot of body image stuff coming up. And I realized that every single call that we were having, I was triggered and I was triggered and I couldn't help her. And I knew I couldn't serve her from that place because I hadn't done my own work through that. I was still living from that paradigm of like, well, what if a diet is the right way? And even though I knew like it wasn't for me and that I had done a lot of work with intuitive eating, there was a lot of like the body image stuff that I really just hadn't dug into that I was being triggered with because of a client that I had. So I had, we only worked together for just a couple months. And from that experience, I knew I had to get more serious about my own work if I wanted to really help people and to go to that next level. Cause that's ultimately why I wanted to leave that paradigm of fitness and health, is because I felt like there was just so much deeper level healing that needed to happen. And that move, the way we move and what we eat was like not even half of what was going on, like not at all. And I was like, if I truly want to help people, I want to help them like internally, like to know that they are good. And so I think a couple of the things that change, I mean, for sure, all of this is mindset. Like the mindset that I have behind this has completely flipped. When it comes to fitness, it's not this all or nothing, you know, good or bad type of black and white thinking that I used to have. I'm always looking for that gray. And instead of before, where you're taught to look at every single person and kind of look for the problems, right? Like look for the problem areas, look where we can fix things, right? The mentality I have now when I have new clients is like, they are perfectly good and worthy and enough exactly as they are. And like, how can I help you from wherever place that you're at? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when, because I'm actually the new member director at our studio. So I interact with every single new member that comes through our studio.
That's awesome.
And I love that, because I get to really interrupt a lot of those conversations with people. And people tell a lot of stuff to trainers, let me tell you. Like when you have the title of a trainer or a fitness professional, it's like people just pour their life out into you.
Been there.
don't know when I signed up to be a therapist, but that's also my title, I feel like. And I love it because I love helping people in that way. But, you know, people will still come in to the studio and say, I just want to, you know, tone up my arms, which I hate the word tone because I'm like, okay, what you really mean is you want to get strong. Like toning is an appearance thing, right?
Yeah.
But we can get strong, right? Yeah. So I always kind of flip that. I'm like, we can definitely help work on making you stronger and like building up those push-ups, lifting heavier, being able to go longer in your workouts, like those kind of goals, right? Yeah. So I think that's another thing that has flipped, because before it was so focused on do whatever it takes to get to X weight, even though like who came up with X weight? What does that even mean? Like this whole language around overweight and obese, like over whose weight? Like,
yeah.
I hate
no
that.
Sense. Over right. what? Yeah.
Over
it's,
what?
It's like you were saying, like, oh, you're over that? Height. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Who's right,
that? We never say that about our height.
No.
Right. And we manipulate our bodies so much, but do you ever see people manipulating their hand size or their feet size? Yeah. Like, no, it's ridiculous, right? Yeah. It's also ridiculous to manipulate our bodies because they're just supposed to be the way they're supposed to be.
Absolutely.
And they can still perform, you know, however we want them to, right? So when we actually look at that perspective of like, how can we actually do the things we want to do in the bodies that we have? And yeah, our bodies might change. They might gain or lose or stay the same. And that's totally fine because it's neutral no matter what. We're able to focus more on what can I do with my body? Mm. And I think that can be a really empowering place. One thing I really love about our studio and that I really hype up is we don't have mirrors in our studio. It's very much an in-body experience. So I point that out when I'm taking people on the tours. I'm like, you might notice we have a lot of TVs and no mirrors. So you don't get to look at your mirror and watch how you're doing burpees and judge yourself the whole 45 minutes. You get to be in your body, experiencing what's going on in this workout, feeling how powerful you are. And I think coming out of that kind of experience where you're really just in your body can be so powerful. And I love fitness. Fitness is a huge part of my life. And I think, you know, just being able to come from that perspective now of like just looking to help people wherever they're at. I think a lot of the language I use to coach people has changed. It's not like push through, like go until you're dead. Like, I don't know, like burn more calories, you know, all this crazy shit that people say, which doesn't matter. And it's not helpful. Like the language I use now is like, do what's accessible for you. Know that you have to listen to your body first and me second. Mm. Okay. Like I actually heard a cycling instructor of mine say that. And I was like, yes, I'm freaking following that.
Yeah.
Because so true, right? Yeah. Like I'm having people of all different fitness levels. And oftentimes, and I'm just looking at someone working out, I don't know if they're having a hard time or not. Yeah, and if they're pushing themselves, like I've had people push themselves to the point of throwing up. And I am so against that because I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
And it's coming from that
expectation. Your body's literally
like,
rejecting what you're doing.
Yes.
In the form of like, throwing up.
Like, I mean, it's just like a perfect example of like, just completely silencing our body's needs.
Right.
In name of like trying to live up to some kind of whatever expectation they're living by, which is I need to get through this class and keep up with everyone else. Yeah. Well, why?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you do one third of this workout and then sit and watch the rest of it. I truly don't. Like, I want you to have fun and I want you to be here and I want you to be a part of this community. I love our community. And, you know, I've been able to bring a lot of that anti-diet mentality to our coaches at our studio and they love it because they're very much, you know, in line with that too, which is very great. They're very
so
open
awesome.
To what I have to say about that because a lot of them will say things and I'm like, okay, well, where's that coming from though? And I question and challenge them. And luckily they all appreciate it. And they very, very much respect what I have to say. And I respect what they have to say. I don't know everything.
Yeah.
I am not here to be the know-it-all genius on it all. I'm learning every single day and I'm open to hearing their perspective so that I can, you know, get on their map and learn. Because that's what I'm here to do is always learn. So yeah, I think the mentality has completely changed. I think I'm so much more relaxed now because somebody's results, whatever that is, it doesn't determine like how good of a coach I am. Like if you lose X amount of weight, I'm a successful coach. Like, no, like to me, like, I think the biggest thing I ask is like, how can we just make this more fun? Mm-hmm. That's my favorite question to ask these days. Anything we're doing, how can we make this more fun? Because when it's fun and it's enjoyable, we're more motivated to do it and we're consistent and we just feel better.
I love this so much. It excites me. It always excites me when I hear about people in the anti-diet intuitive eating space disrupting the fitness world in such a wonderful way. You know, and like the place you work at, we won't like say names, like, but it's like a franchise place, right? Like it's like a pretty big franchise.
Huge franchise.
Yeah.
Very much entrenched. I mean, I think any fitness space you have, you're pretty much in diet culture.
Yes.
Because this franchise does also have these like fitness challenges that they do. Our studio actually decided to stop doing them because So our owners our owners allowed us to stop doing the fitness challenges because essentially it is just getting on this stupid in-body scanner to, you know, see where your weight and muscle mass and fat percentage is, which who gives a crap? Honestly, I don't care. And I tell people that when I'm taking them around, like, you know, some people like this, but I don't like, people.
Yeah.
And our owners are really supportive of that. I understand that some people will want to use those things and that's great. But I've seen it do a lot more harm than good. And now I'm coaching people through, you know, looking at these results. And so I think it's really great that we've been able to just decide to not participate in that. Yeah,
that's really, really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I fucking love fitness too. I love it so much. So much. And it's so cool because I hate that it can get so destroyed and become such an unhealthy disordered thing because of diet culture. And I love when people like you are in this space disrupting the normal narratives. And it sounds like you're doing it in a really beautiful way of just kind of planting seeds and having conversations and just reframing and just kind of like subtly changing the narrative. Cause like over time, like that has a really big impact. Yeah. And think about like somebody like you, and you're the one that like all new members meet first. I'm like, God, how cool is that? And I think it just goes to show us, I think because of diet culture, so many of us are just so like black and white, all or nothing with all of our thinking. And it's like, oh, I can't work for a gym because like they're so diet culture and I'm against diet culture. Mm-hmm. But it's like, y'all, like this is how we make change. By having someone who is anti-diet work in a space like that and begin to change that narrative from the inside out, right? To begin to have these meaningful conversations. Mm-hmm. Like that's awesome because fitness is such an empowering thing. Fitness can change your life. Like fitness can help you get through so much like shit in life. And it helps us to physically feel well, mentally be well, emotionally be well. It's fun. It's community building. Like it is confidence. It is so many things that we can gain from fitness, whatever it is, whether you walk or you do yoga or do like a more intense like boot camp style workout or cycling. Like there's so much to be learned about ourselves through fitness in like the most beautiful ways. And I love for people to get to be like returned to that, you know, or introduced to that for the first time, you know, to switch it from this like punishment and this like thing we do to exert control over like changing our appearance to this beautiful thing that we do for our bodies and for ourselves. Like, and that's the nuance of this, right? Is that like diet culture does not get to own anything.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I was going to bring up because you taught me that.
Yeah.
And that was something that first I kind of brought in the food world, right? Because I was kind of rebelling against eating things that were quote unquote healthier, any kind of diet plan. But I was like, you know what? I freaking love big ass salads.
Yeah.
Like, let me get the chopped salads with all the dressing and croutons and things that come in the bag. Love those. I eat them every day. And diet culture doesn't get to own that. Same with like, if you like CrossFit and marathon training, like I have a friend who's a marathon trainer and she runs a lot and you get to do whatever you want to do. It's your body, your experience. But like, how do we just come at it from a different perspective and offer ourselves more love and grace and like be in communication with our bodies so that we can take care of them to perform in the way that we wish to.
And that's why like, intention and like asking why is such a powerful piece of doing all this, because it is true. It's like moving your body is something that you think about when you were a little kid. Like that was play. That was joy. Mm-hmm. That was how you made friends on the playground. That was all of these things that we as humans really need still as adults. It's not just this thing we have to do so that we look a certain way. It's not a punishment. It's, and that's how it, I know for me, it was framed for so many years, but finding movement that feels good, even if it's, and it's different every day. Like some days I want to do something that feels really intense and really hard. And some days I want to go for a walk. And all of that counts. Dancing around my apartment counts. All of it. And I think that being able to ask yourself, why am I doing this? Is so huge and so important. And like getting to reframe it and reclaim it for yourself. There's nothing more powerful than taking something back that used to belong to a harmful piece of your life. Mm. Like reclaiming something is just
the best.
The best.
And like one of the 10 principles of intuitive eating is joyful movement. Mm-hmm. Like that's a part of intuitive eating is joyful movement. Right? Yes. Because ultimately, I think like people that don't really get intuitive eating and just think like intuitive eating is just like a lack of dieting. They don't get like the depth of it, right? It really is about helping us feel as good as possible, as often as possible. And moving our bodies is essential to that, right? Like it really is. It helps us feel physically well, mentally well, emotionally well. And so being able to reclaim it from diet culture in ways that like honor your unique body, you know, is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And separating that too, because sometimes that fitness piece can be so intertwined with like the food piece, for example.
Yeah.
And the way that we exercise influences the way that we eat, or the way that we eat influences the way that we exercise, right?
Yes.
And so tearing those things apart so they're not so intertwined can be super helpful as well, because in the past, when I would do a rest day or, you know, do yoga or walking, that was considered not enough in my dieting brain. And so that would also mean I can't eat certain foods that day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like last night I haven't worked out, you know, in a couple of days, like formally worked out. I've been moving, right? Cause we're all moving through our lives. And, I got home at like 2 a.m. and I was hungry and I ate mac and cheese because that's what I had. And it was wonderful. Yeah. And I just shout out to my past self for having mac and cheese in the fridge.
Yes.
So happy.
Truly.
I now always keep a box of mac and cheese in my pantry.
Yes. Like, I'm a huge believer in mac and cheese.
It's like, it's necessary.
Yes. And
like,
you need it.
You need it. The other, I had it like a really, I ended up being a really busy day last week. And I had started the day with like, a Peloton ride and then like had breakfast and had like all this stuff going on. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, like I need to eat and I have to be somewhere really soon. I'm like, oh, okay. Mac and cheese, fucking perfect. And I need to like a big, like carby.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You need a substantial food in your belly as soon as possible.
It was like, this is exactly what I need right now. Yes. Like
team mac and cheese
team
for life.
Mac and cheese for life. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh yeah. So being able to like take those apart has been really helpful too.
What's also what's interesting about what you just said too is that how many, and I'm sure our listeners are gonna be like, oh my God, this was me. Because I totally get where you were at, right? Where you were like, okay, if I don't work out this hard, I can't eat these other foods. I've been there as well for sure. And how many times have you heard somebody say, either they're like being healthy, okay, like eating whatever quote healthy way, and working out. Or nothing, or not.
Right. So like,
you know
that
what
all
I mean?
Thing of
yeah.
Because
like, then they're like,
I'm working out, I'm eating healthy. If I'm not working out, I'm not eating healthier things.
Exactly.
Right. It's essentially just not listening to your body.
It's so all or nothing. It's like, I am eating healthy because I'm working out, or I'm working out because I'm eating healthy. And if one of those isn't there, then it's like, well, fuck it. Like, why work out if I'm not eating healthy? Or, you know, it's so interesting to see the way that like diet culture can just fuck us up. Like, what we actually want to do is build whatever lifestyle it is, right? That is a sustainable lifestyle that we have because it helps us feel good, right? Like movement gets to be a thing that we just do consistently over life. And there may be seasons where we do it more than other seasons just because that's called being a human, right? Mm-hmm. But like having that sustainable practice is so key to well-being, you know? And same with eating. It's like, let's eat in a way that helps us feel good. And that is going to change from season to season as well, you know? Mm-hmm. But the all or nothing mentality that diet culture, you know, infects within us, oh man, it just is like, it's just like the freaking villain, the antithesis, like, you know, of what we actually want. It actually keeps us from the healthy lifestyle that we all just want so easily.
For sure.
Yeah. 100%.
Katie, I wish that your gym was in Columbus so I could go to your gym because it sounds so great. And
it's
my
a lot of fun.
God, like everyone who enters into your gym, I'm just like, how lucky are they?
Right. Texas doesn't even know.
Like,
they don't even know how lucky they are.
Seriously, I'm just like, actually, I'll be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area next year for a friend's wedding. And I'm going early too.
Come hang out with
so
me.
Maybe I'll try it if like I'm able. I'm gonna try it. Like, I would love that. I would love to get to experience
so
like your class. But truly, like, I mean that. Like, everyone is so lucky that comes in contact with you and like walks into that gym. They're expecting the typical gym experience, which ultimately just hurts them more. And instead, they're getting this dose of like love and empowerment. And that's so freaking cool.
And it's something I've really had to fight for too. And like I mentioned before, like our owners are very supportive, but that fitness space, you know, it's very much thriving off of insecurities of changing our bodies, right? And so I really had to challenge our owners to trust me in that I was going to grow this studio in a way that was more impactful to people's overall well-being rather than capitalizing on let's get you to lose weight, right? Because I actually, in the beginning of when I started this position in November of 2020, I was having to attend performance meetings where this performance manager of the organization was explaining how to bring someone through a trial at our studios. And I was disgusted by the way that they were doing it, because it was essentially come in for your first workout, have them come into the next day and do an in-body scanner and basically explain how much they should be eating and how much fat percentage they should have, which, by the way, this male person was suggesting that women should be like 18% body fat. And I was like, oh, great. So they're going to lose their periods. Awesome.
Oh my gosh.
And the way that they were having us role play these things. Okay. I did not participate. And I'm just watching these meetings and I'm just feeling gross. Like, I just wanted to throw up, because I'm like, do you even realize that you are essentially teaching eating disorders? This is exactly what's happening right now, and I'm not okay with it. So I told my owners what was going on. I said, this is not helpful. I have a better way. I can help people without this. And I didn't have to attend those meetings anymore. They're not mandatory. They're just something that's there. But I was like, listen, this is not helpful. This is why we have a better way. And I can tell you that our studio signs 20 to 40 new members a month. 20 to 40, okay? And we have a very high price point. And it's coming from this place of empowerment and actually living in your body and feeling that community, healing, right? Offering people the space to do what they need to do and trust themselves. And not from this place of you need to look a certain way, you need to be a certain fat percentage, you need to have X amount of body, you know, body muscle, whatever. That's what I'm building here. So, and it's working.
I mean, hot damn.
Look at you.
Hot damn, Katie.
And what's so cool is, like, you're showing them, right? Like, they think, oh, in order to like have a successful studio and make money and all the like, we have to do it through this lens of weight loss. Let's kind of capitalize on that body shame and then we'll hook you. But actually, it doesn't really work, because, I mean, it might at first, right? People sign up, but then ultimately we know how diet culture works. They'll do it for some time and then they will drop off.
Because shame is actually not a great motivator.
Amen.
As it turns out.
But if they're doing it your way and you're like, hey, come in here. We're going to feel so good. We're going to have so much fun. We're going to like help you feel empowered and good in your body. And you build community. Like, people are going to keep going back to that. That actually is how you build a sustainable, again, like, exercise, like, practice for life. And when you think about it from like a studio standpoint, that's great, because you want your members to keep coming back, and they will keep coming back if they have a fabulous experience and they feel empowered and it's a healthy relationship with their bodies and exercise. Like, it's just like a win-win-win-win-win. It's good for the client. It's good for the studio. Like, it's good for everyone involved.
Yeah. Everyone benefits.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's
oh my God.
Fucking cool. Katie, we're already over time. Just like,
I could just talk to y'all forever.
It's
about
a really
all
big
this.
Bummer, because we even had more stuff that we'll have to have you on again sometime.
Yeah.
but yeah, unfortunately, we have to start wrapping up. So, Steph, you want to ask the last question?
I would love to. Okay. So, Katie, we always like to end with the same question too. So, if you could talk to your younger self at any point, younger Katie, what is one thing that you wish that she knew?
Oh, wow. I always forget that this is the last question. I listen to the podcast all the time. I would just tell her that she has everything she needs right now, that she can trust herself, that she doesn't need to outsource her power to others in other systems to tell her how to be and how to look, that she was born knowing what to do to follow her desires.
Oh. Amazing. I love that. I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Katie. It was such a fun hour talking to you, of course.
Yes. Thank y'all so much.
Where can all of our listeners find you, Katie?
Yeah. So I hang out mostly on Instagram. You can find me with my name, Katie Pijanowski. I have, and then all my programs and things are on my website. It's mindandbodystrong.com. That is my business name. And my coaching program is the Trust Your Body Coaching Experience. It's a 6-month one-on-one coaching experience. So you can find that all on my Instagram and on my website. Uh-huh. And my podcast.
We love
the podcast.
It. And your podcast.
And your podcast.
Which I was on.
Where Julie was on.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Katie, again. This was a wonderful hour.
And
go check her out, y'all.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us for another week of The Babesment. We love you. Bye. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of The Babesment.
We hope you're feeling a little more at home in your body and inspired as hell.
If you are ready to change your relationship with your body and yourself, we're here for you.
Snag a goddess session with Steph.
Or check out Jules' free masterclass to free yourself from diet culture for good.
The links are on our website to learn more and sign up.
And of course, if you loved this episode, we'd so appreciate it if you spread the love a little bit.
Share the app.
Rate the show.
Leave a review.
Subscribe.
You know what to do. Until next time.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.